I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's May 2nd, and we have a lot to talk about. This week, I'm in New York City attending the National MS Society's Pathways to Cures Global Leadership Summit. We've been talking about the Pathways to Cures initiative on this podcast since 2019, when I attended the Pathways to Cures think tank. And if you'd like an overview of what the Pathways to Cures Global Research Initiative is all about, I'll invite you to listen to episodes 125 and 238 of Real Talk MS, and you'll find those links in today's show notes. Episode 125 featured news and interviews from the Pathways to Cures think tank that was convened in Washington, D.C. in 2019. Work on the ideas and strategies discussed at that think tank continued even during the pandemic. And just over a year ago, the Pathways to Cures research roadmap was published. Episode 238 of the podcast will give you a good overview of that research roadmap, which identifies the pathways to stopping MS progression, restoring function that's been lost to MS, and ending MS forever. This week, the National MS Society is convening the world, bringing together the best and brightest minds in MS research, the CEOs of major MS societies, representatives from the pharmaceutical industry, and people affected by MS to update the scientific foundation of the Pathways to Cures research roadmap, focus on the work ahead, and set the global MS research agenda for the next 3 to 5 years. You can expect to hear much more about this historic meeting next week on Real Talk MS. Before we get into today's episode, I'll remind you that you'd be doing me a huge favor if you would spend less than 5 minutes taking the Real Talk MS listener survey. And if you'd like a little extra motivation, once you complete the survey, you can choose to be entered into a drawing for a $100 Amazon gift card. To get to the survey, just visit realtalkms.com/survey. And to make it even easier to get to the survey, you'll find that link in today's show notes. So I hope you'll take a minute to do me this favor, complete the survey, and maybe win a $100 Amazon gift card. This week, we're talking about exacerbations, flares, attacks. These are just some of the words we use when we're talking about an MS relapse. Relapses impact over 85% of the people living with MS, and today we're reviewing the things you need to know when it comes to MS relapses with Dr. Sam Hushmand. Dr. Hushmand is an assistant professor of neurology at the Medical College of Wisconsin and the director of the Multiple Sclerosis Clinic at the Milwaukee Veterans Affairs Medical Center. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Hushmand, there are a few other things that you should know about. The focus of the Pathways to Cures Global Leadership Summit is on research. And some of you have heard me say that I see research as the engine that drives the future. That's why we tend to focus on MS research on this podcast. So a couple of months ago, at the annual meeting of the America's Committee for Treatment and Research in Multiple Sclerosis, I had an opportunity to chat with the new chair of the National MS Society's Scientific Advisory Committee, Dr. Tika Benveniste. Among other responsibilities, the Scientific Advisory Committee evaluates every research proposal that's submitted to the National MS Society, and as the largest private funder of MS research in the world, this is a significant responsibility. I thought you might like to hear Dr. Benveniste's thoughts on topics ranging from innovation in MS research to the Pathways to Cures research roadmap to the MS Society's investment in MS research. In a moment, you'll meet Dr. Tika Benveniste and hear our conversation. We're here at the 2023 ACTRIMS Forum chatting with Dr. Tika Benveniste. Dr. Ben Venisti was the founding chair of the Department of Cell Developmental and Integrative Biology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, where she holds the Charlene A. Jones Endowed Chair in Neuroimmunology. In 2015, Dr. Ben Venisti was appointed Senior Associate Dean for Research Administration at the UAB School of Medicine, and she also holds professorships in the UAB departments of Neurobiology and Neurology. Dr. Ben Venisti is the chair of the National MS Society's Scientific Advisory Committee, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
So, start at the beginning. How did you first become interested in MS research?
So I received my PhD in fundamental human immunology from UCLA, and I will date myself, but that was 1983, and that was a time where there was a growing interest in communication between the immune system and the nervous system, and the disease of multiple sclerosis was held up as sort of the prototype for that type of bidirectional communication. And I was fascinated by that and had an opportunity to do a postdoctoral fellowship with Dr. Jean Merrill at UCLA, who was studying multiple sclerosis and its animal model of experimental allergic encephalomyelitis. So that was my initial foray into the world of MS.
Over the course of your career, what were some of the important moments or events that impacted you most as an MS researcher?
I would certainly say being awarded the postdoctoral fellowship from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. I can still remember where I was in that conversation, and it was a validation of the work that I wanted to do, and also a validation of the support from the MS Society. And I think one of the things I would certainly like to emphasize is the MS Society, you know, to me, it's more than just a national society. It's really a family. And starting off as a postdoctoral fellow and having continued with them over many, many years has probably been the most meaningful for me.
You know, we're here at the ACT Rooms Forum in part to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Brancic Prize, an award that recognizes innovation in MS research. So how do you define the term innovation in MS research? What does that mean to you?
So that's a great question. I think to me, innovation means new ideas, but perhaps more importantly, new ways to ask questions. And that certainly is the implementation of new technologies that certainly, every year get more and more sophisticated and allow us to understand at a much deeper level and at a single cell level what really is happening in both the peripheral immune system and the brains of patients with multiple sclerosis in terms of how immune cells and brain cells communicate with one another. So the innovation that I think we have seen over the last 10 years of awardees has ranged from innovation in imaging technologies, which I think has just blown open the field in terms of our understanding of what's happening in the CNS, a much deeper appreciation for the heterogeneity of both immune cells and brain cells that contribute to MS disease progression. And I think as exemplified by this year's awardee is the really critical role of epidemiological studies and the focus on comorbidities and how that impacts MS. So innovation in both technologies, but new ways of looking at the MS disease progression.
You know, when I think about innovative research, I really can't help but think of the Pathways to Cures worldwide research initiative. By definition, Pathways to Cures almost demands the MS research community continue to focus on the kind of innovative research that's going to allow us to reach the goals of the initiative to stop progression, restore lost function, and end MS forever. What are your thoughts about the Pathways to Cures research roadmap?
So I think it's a fantastic roadmap, and I think it certainly focuses on the three aspects of MS that are most important to us. Certainly the focus now on restoration of both neuronal function, glial function, particularly with respect to remyelination, regeneration of oligodendrocytes, continues to be a vastly important area, given that right now we do not have a mechanism to stop MS at this point. So the focus needs to be on, there's been a certain amount of damage that has already occurred, damage to neuronal cells, the demyelination process, and how can we reverse that to a certain extent? So until we have, and I know you will probably ask about the cure, I think until we have the cure, what we really need to try to understand is how we can restore functionality within the brain. The other components, I think, critical to MS and really just about every disease is identifying better biomarkers, biomarkers that are accessible in a fluid like urine, like serum, that we can use as a predictor for better appreciating people that may go on to develop MS. And that's certainly been a very exciting area in the field of MS, especially with neurofilament light chain as a potential biomarker. Now, we appreciate it's not entirely specific to MS, but it certainly, I think, has been one of the best new biomarkers that we've come up with in a long time. But we need to continue to really identify the very, very earliest biomarkers possible to be able to stop disease.
Well, you wondered if I was going to talk about cures. And you know, frankly, that's what I especially appreciate about Pathways to Cures, that different people living with MS are going to define that word differently, right? So for some people, cure means ending MS in the world forever. For other people, it means stopping the disease. And if the disease can be stopped based upon their circumstance, it may not technically be a cure, but it will feel like a cure. And of course, as you mentioned, the idea of being able to restore the function that's been lost, I think an awful lot of people living with MS would say, that won't cure me, but it will make me whole again, and I'll be able to do all the activities, all the things I did before MS progressed. So I think there are so many different ways that different people might define what a cure really is, and this initiative seems to take all of that into consideration.
No, that's correct. And, you know, John, I would, of the two scenarios that you just presented, to me, without knowing the etiological agent or agents that cause MS, although certainly the work with EBV is very, very exciting, I think until we know those entities, the stop, an absolute stop, no more MS ever, we're not there yet. That's not to say we won't get there. So I like the description of, for patients that are living with MS, really to be able to restore functionality, improve quality of life, and maybe get back some of those activities and opportunities that have been lost with disease progression.
As the chair of the MS Society Scientific Advisory Committee, I have a two-part question for you. First, I hope you'll share your thoughts about the Society's approach to investing in future MS research scientists and clinicians through its fellowship program. And then I'm curious as to what impresses you about the MS Society's approach to finding and supporting the best MS research.
So that's a topic that I love, because I do think one of the strongest aspects of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society is their support of research at different levels. And as I said, you know, my own personal experience starting out as a postdoctoral fellow was so meaningful. And I think for all areas of science, when the earlier you can engage somebody as a graduate student, as a postdoctoral fellow, they will tend to stay in the field. So I think engaging at the level of a postdoctoral fellow, and equally as important, the career transition awards, which I think is one of the best funding mechanisms possible, that really lets individuals know their worth to the MS society, their value, and investing early to me is one of the most important things we can do. Now, in addition to those awards, I mean, the MS Society has really expanded its portfolio of support over the years. The support of basic fundamental grants, I think, has really been the bedrock of the MS support. For the research community, the grants, the Harry Weaver Award is fantastic. If you look at the awardees and where they have ended up and how they are really the leaders of research in MS right now, that award really recognizing the best, I think, has been tremendously important. And then the awards that focus specifically on the clinician, on disabilities, really expanded the portfolio. So I think right now the MS Society has covered really all the bases of research that important for both the training and sustaining investigators in the field of MS.
Well, Dr. Chika Benvenisti, thank you for not only your remarkable body of work, but for all you continue to do to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you, John.
Non-medical lifestyle interventions have been shown to improve the lives of people living with MS. And when you think about lifestyle interventions, you quickly realize that it's a term that covers a lot of ground, including exercise and physical activity. So a research team in Russia launched a study comparing the potential benefits of yoga and physical therapy for people living with MS. The research team enrolled a total of 56 participants who had all been diagnosed with MS, and they were placed in one of three groups. One group of 26 participants went to yoga classes twice weekly for 12 weeks. The yoga classes lasted between an hour and 1 hour and 15 minutes and consisted of 13 basic and alternative poses designed to keep the study participants safe while they practice their poses. 16 of the study participants received physical therapy. The physical therapy sessions also lasted between an hour and 1 hour and 15 minutes and consisted of a 10 to 15 minute warm-up that included stretching and flexibility exercise, 25 to 35 minutes of endurance training, aerobic exercise, muscle strength, coordination, and balance exercises, followed by 10 to 15 minutes of relaxation and breathing. And 14 study participants maintained their normal lifestyle without participating in either yoga or physical therapy. Although the ages of the study participants were all about the same in each of the groups, the participants receiving yoga instruction had been living with MS for about 12 and a half years, while the study participants receiving physical therapy had been living with MS for about 18 years. 100% of the study participants in the group receiving yoga instruction were on a disease-modifying therapy, while a little more than half of the study participants in the group receiving physical therapy were on a DMT. The outcome of the study revealed no differences on each program's impact on symptoms. All three groups of participants had similar scores when it came to measuring balance and posture, walking function, and fatigue. However, and it's kind of a big however, the study participants in the group receiving yoga instruction showed a significant improvement in overall quality of life as measured by a 36-item health survey. Specifically, The yoga participants scored higher when it came to physical and social functioning, life activity, and mental health. Now, interestingly, just slightly more than half of the study participants in the yoga and physical therapy groups completed the 12-week study. And the most common reason for dropping out of these groups was insufficient motivation for physical rehabilitation. Anyone who's tried to keep up their daily workouts at the gym knows how that lack of motivation can work against you. So, without improving any physical symptoms, results of the study showed that 3 months of yoga practice had a significant positive impact on quality of life. I'll remind you that this was a small study sample to begin with, and it was a study that lost almost half of its participants along the way. And at just 12 weeks, it was a relatively short study. We should also point out that other research has shown that 6 months of yoga instruction has led to significant improvement in balance, fatigue, and walking. So while we should be encouraged by the results of this study, there's more work that needs to be done to further confirm its findings and to determine what this could mean when it comes to recommending different forms of physical activity to people living with MS. If you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find that link in today's show notes. Like MS itself, being a caregiver can be an isolating experience. And that lack of social connectivity can be an early step toward a path that leads to worse outcomes for caregivers. And those worse caregiver outcomes often translate to worse outcomes for the person they're caring for. As the caregiver population in America continues to grow, we're seeing a greater effort being made to care for the caregiver. And now, caregiver support company Careloop is partnering with Walgreens to make that support more easily accessible to MS caregivers. When you visit their website, you learn that Careloop is a 10-year-old company that believes that no one should go through caregiving alone. Their mission is to help relieve the stress and anxiety felt by all caregivers, and phase one of their collaboration with Walgreens will begin this year in 7 Walgreens neurology specialty pharmacies. As a quick refresher, a neurology specialty pharmacy works with neurologists and their patients to help manage chronic illnesses like MS, smoothing out the path to receiving disease-modifying therapies and providing other services. In this program, Walgreens pharmacists in these specialty pharmacies will connect MS caregivers to Careloop's caregiver platform, where they can receive counseling from Careloop's professional care coaches, as well as access cloud-based tools designed to help them manage their caregiving responsibilities. Phase one of this program rollout is focused on introducing caregivers to Careloop's platform. The second phase of the program will include metrics that measure medication adherence and improved patient outcomes, and health and stress levels of caregivers. The program will be offered by the end of this year in Walgreens Neurology Specialty Pharmacies located in Glendale, Arizona, West Hollywood, California, Sandy Springs, Georgia, Chicago, Illinois, Farmington Hills, Michigan, Seattle, Washington, and Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. Speaking of specialty pharmacies, this seems like the perfect time to remind you that one of the ways to minimize the number of MS relapses you're likely going to experience is by working with your neurologist to first identify the right disease-modifying therapy for you, and then staying on that DMT. Joining me in a moment to discuss all the things about MS relapses that you need to know is my guest, Dr. Sam Hushmand. We know relapses are a part of living with MS, but they can sometimes be the part of MS that most knocks a person off their stride. A relapse can impact you physically and emotionally. They show up uninvited, and you're never quite sure when a relapse will leave or what you'll be left with when it does. Joining me today to talk about what an MS relapse is, how to know when you're having one, and what you can do to manage that relapse when it occurs is Dr. Sam Hushmand. Dr. Hushmand is a director of the Multiple Sclerosis Clinic at the Milwaukee Veterans Affairs Medical Center and an assistant professor of neurology at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Hushmand.
Thanks for having me, John.
To start us off, can you explain what an MS relapse really is and what causes them?
Sure. The technical definition of an MS relapse is a clinical episode with patient-reported symptoms and objective findings typical of MS that last 24 hours in duration. So that basically means a symptom characteristic of MS that comes on in hours to days and lasts beyond 24 hours. In terms of what causes a relapse, this is not fully understood. We know that there's many triggers to a relapse, but regardless of the trigger, it's followed by an inflammatory phase where certain types of immune cells enter the central nervous system and cause demyelination, inflammation, and cellular damage, which then impairs signal transduction.
I'm hoping you can resolve a question lots of people wonder about by helping us understand whether a relapse, an exacerbation, a flare-up, and an attack all really mean the same thing.
Yeah, in the context of multiple sclerosis, a relapse, exacerbation, flare-up, attack, they're used interchangeably, and they all refer to that same phenomenon of sudden worsening of MS symptoms or the occurrence of new MS symptoms.
There are four types of disease courses associated with MS: clinically isolated syndrome, relapsing remitting MS, secondary progressive MS, and primary progressive MS. Do relapses occur in all four disease courses? And does a relapse itself impact disease progression?
Traditionally, using the traditional definitions of these MS subtypes, relapses occur in clinically isolated syndrome, relapsing remitting MS, and secondary progressive MS. Primary progressive MS is characterized as progression from onset. In clinically isolated syndrome, to get the diagnosis, you must have one relapse. If you would have a second relapse, your categorization would change to relapsing remitting MS. When a certain percentage of population changes from relapsing remitting MS to secondary progressive MS, that's characterized by ongoing relapses with concurrent disability progression.
How does someone living with MS know if what they're experiencing is a relapse?
Yeah, this is very challenging to determine if what you're having is a relapse. And the two tips I give my patients to help identify if it is a relapse is the symptom they're having a new neurologic symptom that doesn't have an alternative explanation, and this new symptom has been going on for over 24 hours? Or two, is this a worsening of a pre-existing symptom that is worse than their baseline, and again, lasting over 24 hours? Given the challenges in having to determine if that's the case, sometimes it's beneficial for patients to keep a symptom diary.
Can you explain what a pseudo-exacerbation is?
Yes, a pseudo-exacerbation is a term to describe temporary worsening of MS symptoms that is not caused by inflammatory activity or damage to the central nervous system. A pseudo-relapse is often triggered by things such as infection, increased body temperature, whether that's due to exercise, environmental exposure, or even fevers, and also stress. The important thing to note is that once the trigger is removed, the symptoms should resolve. If the symptoms do not resolve, you may not be dealing with a pseudo-relapse.
I just heard you mention that stress can be a trigger for a pseudo-relapse. I'm wondering whether or not stress can also trigger an exacerbation.
Yes, this is an area within the MS community that's up for debate, but there is research that suggests that stress itself can trigger an MS exacerbation or an inflammatory exacerbation. The relationship between stress and MS is not fully understood. There's been several proposed theories, whether it's that stress causes increased cortisol release or other hormonal release, And also, it's noted that stress can have indirect effects on MS symptoms, such as disrupting people's sleep pattern, affecting their mood, and impacting their overall well-being. So in my opinion, stress can cause both inflammatory attacks, relapses, as well as pseudo-relapses.
Is there anything a person living with MS can do to prevent a relapse?
Yes. One of the things that, regardless of your MS subtype, you should do is to live a healthy lifestyle. We know that this is very important, and it will help decrease the likelihood of a relapse. By healthy lifestyle, I mean exercising regularly, eating a healthy, balanced diet, getting adequate hydration, adequate sleep, and avoiding things such as smoking. Beyond that, it's very important to follow with your clinical provider, who can monitor you and help determine what sort of risk you are for relapse. One of the big tools we as clinicians use to prevent relapses is placing patients on disease-modifying therapies. Currently, there are several disease-modifying therapies, and all of these have their own risks and benefits, as well as an ability to reduce relapses. And it's important to talk with your clinician and figure out what is the best disease-modifying therapy for you.
How important is early treatment if someone thinks they are having a relapse?
So early treatment is important because we know that acute treatments for MS relapses help expedite recovery. And the sooner you get somebody on a treatment, the sooner they have a chance of improving. Now, with that being said, it isn't that if you feel like you're having an MS relapse, you should immediately go to the emergency department. You should consider contacting your clinician, who's much more familiar with you than providers in the emergency department. And they can help triage and determine if you're having a relapse and whether other tests need to be done.
Steroids are often used to treat a relapse. Can you explain what they do and whether there are other treatment measures that can be taken to rein in a relapse?
Yeah, steroids are our first line for treating MS relapses. Corticosteroids work in two ways for MS relapses. One, they help decrease inflammation. And second, whenever giving high dose corticosteroids, they are lymphocytotoxic, meaning they kill lymphocytes or a certain type of white blood cell that can be problematic and contribute to inflammation and cellular damage in those with MS. In the United States, we give steroids either intravenously with a preparation called methylprednisolone at a dosage of 1,000 milligrams for 3 to 5 days, or we give them orally with prednisone at a dosage of 1,250 milligrams for 3 to 5 days. In addition to corticosteroids, we have other treatments that have been shown to be beneficial. One of these is ACTH, which is an injection you can give intramuscularly. And the other is a procedure called plasma exchange, also known as PLEX, where your blood is filtered and antibodies removed.
You know, there's no getting around the fact that relapses can be scary. Not only does a person not know when a relapse is coming, but they also don't know what effect that relapse is going to have on them in that moment or in the future. This can have a real effect on anyone's sense of well-being. I'm wondering whether you have any tips for getting through an exacerbation without letting it live rent-free in your head.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things is talking to your clinician. They can certainly help plug you in with resources in your local area to deal with the stress of having an MS relapse. Also, having a strong support network can be greatly beneficial with those going through an MS relapse, from friends, family, and even your local MS community.
Well, Dr. Sam Hushman, thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
It was a pleasure, John. Thanks for talking with me, too.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/296. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll do me a huge favor and choose to participate in the Real Talk MS Listener Survey. The survey will take you less than 5 minutes to complete, and it could mean a $100 Amazon gift card for you. You'll find the survey at realtalkms.com/survey, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.